coaching back then, utterly different to how it's done now, I suppose. The different, well, you mentioned Keith Richardson and Mike Nichols. How much do they differ in their approaches to coaching?
Not a great deal, really. I mean, because in our training sessions, there used to be very much fitness training, and then in the limited time that we had, because, I mean, we would start training at 7, and then by 8.30, training would finish, because obviously guys had a work day. We sort of had half hour at the end of the sort of coaching, and that consisted of tidying up planned moves, getting the skills right. The forwards used to go off, the backs used to go somewhere else. So in that respect, but I think it was really probably the difference was their visions really of how the game was to be played, you know. Keith was a little bit more, how can I say, open play. If you want to try something, do it, but you had to stand by those actions, you know. Whereas I think other coaches, Mike was a little bit more pragmatic. We'll do this, we'll do that, and let's be safe, let's do this, you know. So it wasn't so much what we actually did, it was more about the philosophy of how we were going to play. That's where I think coaches changed, and for me when I chose Keith.
And Dick Smith?
And Dick was, he did like the ball to be thrown around. Dick encouraged that. Dick was a player that could play in the backs quite easily. He had the most marvellous dummy. He was very quick and all the rest of it. Could easily have had a career in the backs in terms of playing rugby. But Dick's encouraged open play. And I think that reflected on the number of tries really that I scored, because if it was kept tight, that would never have got those tries in those seasons, you know. And that was something which was a little hard to take, that people thought Gloucester just played very straightforward safety first rugby, but they didn't at times. You know, it was very open and flowing, and we used to score lots of tries against lots of people.
But if you thought the game was going to be won by playing a tight game, you adapted and played a tight game.
Exactly, that's right.
And perhaps those were the games that the Times reporter was at, say.
Yeah.
You know, and that's how reputations get built, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. And I can remember, you know, some of the games that we scored lots of tries, we didn't score those tries and points until the very last quarter of the game, you know. And I think we used to be able to wear teams down, and in that period, when you'd worn them down and they were a little bit ragged and all the rest of it, then that was the time that our scores came, you know. So you had to play to strengths, and that's what we did.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, all the reporting in those days, at least in the newspapers, was very London-centric, wasn't it, really?
Mm-hmm. It was.
Yeah.
You can't say we were the most popular team, you know, in terms of the RFU and all the rest of it. And some of the papers were really quite anti the Gloucester style of play and all the rest of it, but I think they were wrong. I think lots of people scored lots of tries, and I think we're an attractive team to watch. And
Well, supporters thought so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even in those days, we were amongst the best supported teams, as we are now, you know.
81-82 was your final season. Did you decide yourself that you were going to quit at that point?
I did. I made a decision to finish playing. Then I could see my career was coming to an end, and it had been taught that at that time that if I wanted to, I could join the selectors. My kids also had been born in the, you know, 80 and 82, my son and daughter. And I decided, yes, 14 years playing rugby. I made that decision to retire then. There were players that were coming through. I think Phil Pritchard had come onto the scene on the wing. And I felt, there were people there that would easily take over. And that was the right time for me to finish playing. But I didn't leave the club. I then carried on in, joined the selectors. I did selection for a number of years, which is strange because I wanted to sort of finish playing, so I didn't have the commitment, if you like. of the Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, going straight onto selection. That's all that happened. Is you had to turn up on the training nights to pick the teams for the next game, you know. And so that didn't quite work out. But no, I think that was the right time.
So you didn't play more regular lower level?
No, I stopped completely. Yeah, stopped completely. As I say, joined the selectors and enjoyed that. Yeah, it was. But the one thing that one of the reasons I decided to stop was to have a little bit more time. Didn't actually materialise because of this, the need to go to every game and
Is there any coaching?
No, that was never my forte. No. Never considered it, and I think to be a coach, you've either got it or you haven't, you know. And you've got the charisma, you've got the knowledge, and to be a Gloucester coach, you had to know bits about forwards, bits about backs, and you had to have the presence to be able to put it over. And I didn't really fit in. I didn't fit all those criteria, so it was nothing that I ever really thought I was going to go into. After selection, I carried on. I went and joined the committee and did committee duties up until the time that Tom Walkinshaw came in and the game turned professional. And then really everything changed as far as that was concerned.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned about professionalism. Do you ever wish you could have played professionally?
Oh, I do. I really, really do. I would absolutely have loved that. I think if the game had been professional, I would have loved to have been a professional player. Such was, I love playing rugby, and to do it as a every day of the week, as a to be involved with it as your job would be absolutely fantastic.
One thing I haven't really asked you about: who were the real characters in the team? Who were the how shall I put it? Who were the presences, in the changing room?
Well, I suppose you have to sort of think of Nicky Burton. He had charisma. He had the sort of star factor. He also had the ability to mimic other people. He was he was absolutely great at that, and he had such a knowledge of everything about the game. And I guess of all people in the club, he would be the one that you'd say sort of stood out amongst the crowd as the that sort of person, all the other us really were sort of the mundane run-of-the-mill guys, but he had that little bit of extra. And that's reflected in his sort of business life. He's taken that through and grasped every opportunity. I think he of all people would be the one in a changing room that
I thought John Bayliss would be a bit of a live wire in the changing room as well.
Well, John was, and he was very assured of his own abilities on the field, and he loved the contact. he was, you laugh, but he was obviously a very character rugby player that people didn't really like playing against, because he was a very physical guy.
He would strut around the field.
He had a swagger. He definitely had a swagger about John. From my memory, there was only one other person that ever got the better of him, and he was a Harlequin player called John Coker,
heavyweight boxing champion.
And I think it happened before I joined the club, that this guy had sort of taken John Bayliss out by surprise, coming in from a different angle, and he laid him on his back, and that didn't happen very often. You saw it, didn't you? That didn't happen very often. I had one run in with John Coker once. I was playing against him on the wing, and I think I took him out early, and he wasn't best pleased about that. And play very rapidly disappeared to another part of the field, and I was left with him, and he was a little upset, and I thought, oh, I don't know what's going to happen here. Anything could happen. Fortunately, it didn't. But I don't think I'd like to have tackled him. Legally, let's put it that way, because he was a boxer, wasn't he? Olympic standard boxer or something, and big guy.
I think he had a boxing blues, certainly, didn't he? I think he went he go to Queen's, Belfast, and then to either Oxford or Cambridge after that?
Yeah.
And
I thought about that. I thought I shouldn't have taken him out early, but I did. And
I mean, I can remember leaning over the rail at the shed, the Harlequins game, and Coker comes thundering down the wing. You were within a couple of feet of him, and it was, quite frankly, a pretty terrifying experience just to be there on the rail, when he came thundering past. Because he had speed, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Yeah, very athletic guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very athletic guy. You say that, I remember one other time that we were playing Transvaal in the county, this was, as they used to be known, they're all different names now, aren't they? But Transvaal, Northern Transvaal. We were playing Transvaal, and this guy came at me, and his only intention was to run straight through me. And I'm thinking, I'm getting myself prepared for this tackle. I'm thinking, this is probably going to hurt. And John Pullen came in and tackled him just before he got to me. I thought, thank God for that.